Previously on Popping Collars.
And then I find that often some of the choices our young people make when they're alone or they feel alone are sometimes ones that are not what you would want for them.
Right. And also, it's not just about young people, right? I mean, I think that part of the way that we're making the conversation safe for us is to be like, oh, thank God.
I'm talking about the kids.
Yeah, that's not at all, that's not the case.
You're totally right. So make it unsafe, Liz. Are we gonna make it unsafe? Come on, Lucas.
To the crown. So let me start it this way. Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture. I'm your host. My name is Greg Knight. I'm in Palm Beach, Florida. With me is my co-host, Betsy Gonzalez from Alexandria, Virginia. Hello, Betsy.
Hey, Greg.
And we have two special guests for this episode. First, he couldn't get enough from his experience last time, so we had him come back. It's Lucas Mix from Princeton, New Jersey. Welcome, Lucas.
Hi, Greg.
And the host of the Priest Pulse podcast from Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania, it's Benjamin Gildas. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
This is episode 36 of the 1,282nd ranked podcast in the iTunes spirituality category. And our topic today is the new movie Batman v Superman. And fair warning, because we haven't done this disclaimer in a while, we do talk spoilers on the show, so just be aware. So this is the story of a man who dresses up like a bat in order to fight crime, and an alien who dresses up like a circus strongman in order to fly angelically into dangerous situations in order to save those in need. And they fight each other. And at some point, Wonder Woman shows up, and we have the makings of a new DC Comics franchise that will spit out two films a year until our grandkids are in college. So here is a simple poll to get us started. Are you more of a Superman, a Batman, or a Wonder Woman fan? And why is that?
I'm a total Superman fan, mostly because I'm a hopeless idealist, and I really go for the idea of truth and justice, if maybe not quite so much the American way.
You're living in the light side.
Yeah.
I think ultimately, Superman is the most decent of the DC Comics characters. He's just this kid raised in middle America who has kind of a set idea of what values are. And you know what? If that means rescuing a cat out of a tree, then doggone it, that's just what you do, right? And I think that that's great. I think that that's wonderful. You know, this movie made a big deal about setting up this sort of conflict between God and man and making Superman into this God figure and Batman into this, you know, ultimate human figure. And, you know, I'm reminded by a panel that I love from the old Justice League comics where Batman is telling Flash or Green Lantern or somebody, he's like, you know, Superman is the most human of all of us at the end of the day. And I think that that's right. I think that there's something wholly human about Superman. What about you, Betsy? Who do you identify with?
Listen, and I'm not just going with this because I'm the only chick on this podcast, but I gotta say, at the end of the day, in this movie, with this permutation, how we're embodying these three characters, I mean, Wonder Woman is like, the two of you are worrying way too much about all this other crap. Let's just get done what we need to get done. Like, why? You're off brooding in the rubble of your parents' home. Okay, great. You know, you're really having some interpersonal conflict. Fine. But we've just got to beat this monster, or I've got to protect my identity, or whatever that is. Anyway, I liked her. I liked the humor and the action part of her. And, of course, it's a setup for, yes, I want to see her, Diana Prince's whole backstory. I really appreciate it, because I did have some quandaries a little bit here and there with Batman and with Superman. But I feel I am more of a lighter side.
Darkness, light, yeah. Where are you?
That's a really hard question to answer. I love all three of them so much, so I want to like say all three of them for so many different reasons. I really like Diana Prince a lot as a character, and I like that she sacrifices her life with her people in order to go out into the world. So I kind of want to say her because I also loved her in this movie. I didn't think she needed to be in it, really. I mean, I hate to say that because I really liked her, but I don't know what she did for the movie, but other than, I guess, setting up the next one. But I guess ultimately my answer has to be Superman. I'm an idealist also. I'm with you, Lucas, on that. And I like virtue, and I like the things that Superman stands for, and I like his humility. So I guess it has to be Superman.
Yeah, so we talked about this. So we had an episode of the show a while back where we had a writer from Justice League on the show, Mike Friedrich, and he talked a little bit about the mythology that he worked with as he was approaching and sort of writing the comics and stuff like that. He always was drawn to this idea of the Batman, right? And this idea that someone who suffers the tragedy that Bruce Wayne suffers can't sort of find his way out of that. He's just stuck. He's stuck in that moment, in that little kid moment. For the rest of his life, and his sole goal is just to not let any other kid suffer the same fate that he did. And this movie kind of deals with that. I mean, you see sort of the stuckness of the Bruce Wayne character in this movie.
Do you ever? I'm like that coat is brutally attractive that you're hanging out in the mansion, you know, demise. With the graffiti and all the stuff, you know, and God bless Jeremy Irons as Alfred. Just, you know, I'll go with you. I'll foster and pastorally care for this aching wound that will not heal in you.
Right.
But it is, and I did like how they really got into the mythology. I thought, you know, Zack Snyder really showed his artistic direction with the pearls and the falling and the well and the things and the way they did that spin this time. I think I connected to it better than I have in other incarnations for whatever reason. And him also saying, you know, I'm now the age that my dad was.
I was actually a little disappointed because as much as I felt it was a dark Batman movie, at the end of the day, the only reason they disagreed with each other is because they didn't have enough information. And I think they could have gotten a lot more out of this idea that there really is something disturbing about this alien who's got so much power over everyone's lives that they could have played up this question of, is it, you know, can you ever trust someone as powerful as Superman to be as good as Superman? There was really an opportunity in this movie to ask this question of which one of them was better. And at the end of this movie, you really thought that Superman was the better character. Nobody, I think, could have walked out of this movie and not thought that Bruce Wayne was just this really messed up kid.
I will just speak to the misunderstanding. I walked out of this movie, and one of the guys I was seeing the movie with was like, he's like, I've read more summer rom-com books based on misunderstanding that a simple conversation between two elements could have changed the entire plot. And all it took then was having the same name as your mom and everything is fine. And that was a little annoying. It was annoying that we have these full on riffs, you know, the CrossFit / Kryptonite rendering rift, all this stuff, and it's all based off of, you know,
that's true, though. But, you know, J.K. Rowling could have cut like 600 pages out of every Harry Potter book if Harry had just talked to Dumbledore on page 32.
Greg,
you know?
Don't get defensive. Don't get defensive with your Superman tattoo. Don't get defensive. It's okay.
No, I am with you on the I'm with you on the Zack Snyder. So I'm not a Zack Snyder fan. All right. I wasn't a fan of 300, wasn't a fan of Watchmen, and it's funny because one of the things I wanted to talk about, one of the things on my little notepad here, is that Zack Snyder said that he saw this movie, Batman v Superman, as an extension to the questions that he was trying to raise with Watchmen. And so that's interesting because I think that Batman v Superman is going in a different direction than Alan Moore wanted to go with Watchmen. But
I thought Watchmen could have done I think Watchmen did a much better job with this question of, you know, is Superman trustworthy? It's
right.
A different character in Watchmen, but it's exactly the same question. So I was really hoping for that in this movie.
Well, if you have questions about how do you live in a world with a demigod or a god, then yeah, Watchmen is is the place to go. But the opening sequence to this movie, so the flashback to the Man of Steel, the end of the climax to Man of Steel and Metropolis, and Bruce Wayne's perspective, right? And going back to this idea of no kid is going to suffer the same fate that Bruce Wayne suffers, like that whole opening sequence encapsulated the ideological difference between where Superman was as a hero and where Batman was as a hero. That was the reason for them to fight, was him clutching that girl, looking up at the sky, watching these two creatures battle each other in the sky. That was the reason to fight. There wasn't any other reason necessary.
Yeah.
Like all the Lex Luthor stuff, none of that stuff. Yeah, like that was the ideological difference.
Well, we've
right?
all seen people in their own lives. If you're trapped in a narrative of the past, if you're always looking past and everything you see in front of you is a mirror, or it's either a reflection of the past or it stands in opposition to the past or whatever, if you're always trapped in something back here, you're never the ability to look forward and see hope and see movement. It just cannot happen. And if you're then a person who's either dealt with that story and is no longer a prisoner of that story, even though that story hunts you and aliens from your world find you, you're not going to be a prisoner of that past, and that you tend to look forward. And I think that is when we talk about the psychological differences in us and why we chose perhaps the characters we chose, that backwards looking all of the time, that feels like a prison, as opposed to, and always being in that well with the bats, as opposed to the ability to look forward and imagine something that you don't know exactly what it's going to look like and how you're supposed to be in relationships with other people and be as different as you are. But that you're at least trying.
Yeah, Batman entombs himself. He buries himself.
Yeah.
And it's funny, that opening sequence where the bats are raising him out of the grave, like he's being brought into the light. And he talks about, I was going into the light. He never goes into the light. He always goes back underground. He always keeps burying himself, entombing himself, going back into his pain and back into. I mean, this is a man who really needs reconciliation. He needs something, right? And it's funny because that's something that we never think. I mean, I think about it, you know, in parishes. The rite of reconciliation is something that I never even think about. And yet it's a sacrament that's right there in front of us, and we ignore it so much.
And we like to pretend our pain is something we can't get over. I think there's the word isn't comfort because it doesn't actually make you stronger, but there's this desire to retreat into yourself and say, I'm not powerful enough to overcome this, therefore it's acceptable for me to wallow. Yeah.
So one of the things I think this movie could have done, because that scene in the beginning was so fascinating to me, I had just re-listened to the teaser trailer for Man of Steel. Do you remember the teaser trailer for Man of Steel? It's the one where Russell Crowe is giving him the Jor-El monologue, and he says, you will give them something to hope for, and you will rate that, you know, they'll stumble and they'll fall, but eventually they'll join you in the sun. And like, so he's obviously harking back to that in that opening scene when the bats are carrying him up to the light. Like what they could have done in this movie is this question of, does Batman need that symbol of Superman or to go up into the light? Or maybe he doesn't, maybe he has his own symbol. And they could have dealt with that a little bit, you know, that power to overcome pain and suffering in our lives and the dark things in our past. And I feel like it's like they raised the question but never really dealt with it.
The question of Man of Steel is, okay, so if Superman is a symbol of hope, if he is someone, right, if the S does stand for hope in Kryptonian, and if he is going to lead people to the light, to the sun, then how do we reconcile that with what he did to Metropolis, right? And so this question of, does the world need a Superman? I always go to Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose knows the question. He's the one that raises that question in this movie. And I'm glad for that, too, because, yeah, does the world need a Superman? Because I think that there's something comforting about, you know, this knowledge that there's this alien that can just kind of take away whatever pains that we have, whatever tragedies, whatever disasters, there's this thing that can kind of cover it up. And yet what we know is that it's our coming together after tragedy, after disaster, where healing actually happens. And if there were a Superman, what would that even look like, right? Like, how would you even process?
One of the things that I really liked in this movie was that they really showed Batman being a paternalistic good guy. He wanted to do things for other people that he thought they needed, but he never asked them. And it was really, I think, important to me that Superman is willing to show up at the Capitol and have the conversation about what the country needs. And despite the fact that he's the more powerful figure, they showed him as the one who was willing to build something together with the people that he was helping instead of just sending them checks in the mail.
Can we talk about Lex a little bit?
I was about to ask that too, yep.
The conflicts inside him between being intellectually powerful yet physically weak, and then being having to rely on mercenaries and others to get his work done. But that moment, God, that moment with, was it with Superman on the helipad? When we talk about each of these characters having some sort of trauma of their own. You know, Superman's was very young, doesn't always remember it. Batman, just immersed in it. And I would say Lex as Batman, he knows how to pull Batman's strings because he is equally immersed in the own trauma, his own trauma of his childhood. His trauma of being an abused child at the hands of his father has completely altered his view of how people with great power should behave, because there is no God for him. If God allows what in his mind, if God allows his father to treat him the way he does, God is not good. Or if God allows his father to treat him the way he treated him, then God is not powerful. God may be good, but not all powerful. And that argument, in the way that I feel so many people, so many of the students I work with, so many of the people that I deal with as a person in this particular position of being a religious, you know, worker in this way, this argument of how is God at play in the world? You know, where is God intervening and not intervening?
Well, see, you're nicer about this than I am, because I walked away from it. I walked away from it being like, this movie is like an angsty college student who just took philosophy 101 for the first time and is like, I can question God's existence. Like, but maybe I'm not being fair to the fact that people do wrestle with this stuff. So maybe I should be more fair to the question, because I walked away from it kind of like, yeah, these questions have been asked so many times, I'm kind of tired of these questions being asked, especially by these characters.
Mm-hmm. I thought they did a good job of tying that abstract theodicy question into a practical question, because Lex sort of lays out for us this idea that I don't believe that Superman can be good because I don't believe the world can be good, and I don't believe the world can be good because my life isn't good.
Right.
And so rarely do we make that connection from personal experience through theology into ethics in a way that's really tangible. So for me, that moment struck as very real.
I liked Lex. I thought Jesse Eisenberg played the character in a really interesting way that I actually liked. And I'm kind of surprised to say that, but I liked the weirdness. I liked the craziness of it. I mean, he was insane. He was terrifying every time he was on screen, I think. And so I like really walked away enjoying him in that movie.
Oh, I totally agree. I thought that, you know, this was an actor making a really bold choice because this was something that could totally get panned. The moment for me was the speech. When he's giving the speech at the library, and he's talking about what his motivations are, why he's giving money, why he's doing philanthropy, all of this stuff. And he gets to this moment where he gets stuck because he knows what he wants to say, but he can't figure out how he wants to say it. And it's this moment of powerlessness, right? Because he's incredibly brilliant, and yet he's not able to articulate exactly what it is that he wants to say. And he gets so angry and frustrated, but he doesn't play it angry and frustrated. He just plays it kind of manic. And I thought it was a fabulous choice. Like, I thought this was a Lex that was very relatable when it comes to someone who, you know, who has probably been given a lot in life, but also has a lot of intelligence to sort of figure out where he can make things happen. And then the frustration that comes with knowing that there are metahumans in the world that have way more abilities than he will ever have. That has got to be so galling. And I think that it was such a hidden motivation that it was easy to miss it as to why Lex was doing the things he was doing. But when you saw the small moments that Jesse Eisenberg was playing, you could add up, this is where the motivation is.
This is
where the frustration lies.
I love me some Gene Hackman any day of the week. I mean, like, he's just an acting genius. But the depth of Lex, not present there. Yeah, this gave me a different dimension than I had ever had on the character before. And it's a movie that makes you feel uncomfortable. Like, I felt so uncomfortable for him in that party thing. And I also sat there thinking, maybe it isn't that he can't always find the words that he wants to say. It's that he really wants to say all this other crap that's all of his other philosophy of how the world works. But he cannot. And he just needs to talk about how books are good for kids, and they're good for kids. And kids like the books. And reading is great. And he just, you know, when he really wants to tell them all what's real, what the reality is.
Yeah.
He knows what's real. And
we need a kryptonite bomb, people.
Yes, we do, yeah. Everybody. And why can't we all get on board with this? What's wrong with you? So, yeah.
Can we talk for a moment about Wonder Woman's choice to step out and not do the superhero thing? Because I feel like there's real moral ground there. When are we responsible for stepping in, and when is it okay to, like, have our own lives?
She's not the only one opting out, you know. So we had Aquaman there as well.
Yeah.
Who's evidently just hanging out in a shipwreckage somewhere. I don't really know what he's up to. And then
gave that camera a good long look too.
Right, just hey, yeah. Look at my pets and watch what's happening to me here. It's just gonna
be so bad.
I'm so awesome, right?
Cyborg, right? Is the professor there, and then Flash,
and then Flash, right? So I don't know what Cyborg's doing. Flash also seems to have opted out as well,
right?
You know, but Lucas, you mean the fact that she says, like, she hasn't, like, she for the last century chose not to get involved in human affairs? Is that what you were talking about with the opting out?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of got the impression that she had, you know, tried saving the world, and it hadn't really gone over all that well. I see her in with the Belgians, and that was just a fiasco. And so, you know, she just decides that she's going to be rich and maybe interfere every once in a while, but she's not going to do the Superman Batman thing anymore. Yes. You know, and she's getting on the plane, like, she's going to go away and finally her conscience gets the best of her. So particularly when you've got Superman who can't help but, you know, have all of this collateral damage, even when he's just trying to be with his girlfriend. And Batman, who just can't help stick his foot in it because he's messed up. Here we have Wonder Woman, who actually is expressing agency in stepping out and not using her superpowers to manipulate the world. There's, you know, she's not a hero, but she's also not producing collateral damage.
Well, I mean, it's hard when you're wearing so many dresses that incorporate metal at the same time. Like, that can be really difficult to kind of figure out what you're going to really do next. So there's a lot of decision-making around that. Like, will there be fabric here, metal over here? Like, I'm not sure. That's why it's a great setup for whatever her story is going to be. How are we going to get into this whole Amazonian situation? And you want to talk about gods? We're talking about a whole other set of gods. You know, there's a whole other thing to get into with her. Those were essentially hidden teasers. I was less excited about Aquaman for whatever reason. But hidden teasers inside the movie for you to be like...
It's pretty obvious why you should be less excited about Aquaman.
Poor Aquaman.
Poor Aquaman. He always is a chef. I want her and Batman to hook up. I'm just saying that.
I was about to say that.
That's what we're looking for, right?
Yeah, I was about to say, can I geek out about the fact that they dropped hints towards romance between them? Oh, the greatest romance story of all time, Batman and Wonder Woman. I hope that's where it goes. I can only...
Hey, well, as long as he can get that armor off, because for God's sake, that would be like the least sexy buildup I could imagine, because it's just like, it's almost like he's in like a gravity-filled world, like an anti-gravity world, and he's having to wear a gravity suit to, like, kind of hold him down, because I know he needed it to fight Superman. I know he needed some padding.
You don't want to have to break out a socket wrench in order to hook up.
Hold on. All right, let's do this. I'm sorry.
I kept waiting for Bruce Wayne to, like, make really inappropriately timed comments towards her at the end of the movie, like, Superman's laying there dead, and he's like, so, what you doing later? Or at the funeral. So, right. You want to go back to burn down Wayne Manor? Or
the hotel we're staying at in Smallville. I'm sorry, Greg. I was over here beating a large tractor tire with... sorry, I missed that. What'd you say?
Bruce Wayne loves his CrossFit. You guys. That was like a big CrossFit advertisement right there.
One of the issues I have with all the Christ imagery around Superman in this movie and maybe any time is that I think we were talking earlier about how, you know, do we need a Superman? I think we want one, right? I think we want that kind of savior. But I think that's exactly what the gospel doesn't give us. You know, I think it's exactly what Jesus is not, which is this. Jesus is not sort of sacrificial in like the way that a police officer is or a fireman is of like I'm willing to do violence to protect you. I'm willing to do basically competing on the same space in the same space as other powers in the world. I think it's exactly what Jesus doesn't do. And I think it's exactly what we see. Like we just had Easter and it was exactly what we don't see in John's narrative of Jesus' trial and his dealings with Pilate.
It doesn't quite always add up the way that we think it would.
Well, it's the kingdom of God versus the kingdom of the world, you know, and that the cross becomes the showdown of the kingdom of the world versus the kingdom of God. And on that day, on Friday, the kingdom of the world won. Mm-hmm. And that was the visual. To then have to enter a mystery and wonder of standing in an empty tomb and saying, oh, well, this is victory. What? You know, what are you talking about? You know, for Zack Snyder, it should be filled with exploding rubble, because that's what this movie was full of.
There's no hero's quest for the Christian, right? Like, that's not the journey. That's not the Christian journey. It's the martyr stories, which is why they're so prevalent in the early church. So, again, I think this just is such a – I think the Western mythology has just – it wants Superman. Like, Western mythology wants the Superman story. That's – we want the hero's quest. That's what we want. But I think it's exactly what the gospel doesn't offer to us.
There's some heavy Christ figure action happening.
Just a little smidge.
Did anyone else think it was a little
through all the rubble? The rubble blocks a lot of it, but it's hard.
Anybody else think it was a little tacky to come out on Easter weekend?
Totally.
Yeah.
I have to think that Jerry Siegel, this nice Jewish boy from Cleveland, has got to be like, what did you do to my Moses story?
I know. Come on. I'm leading humanity with hope and wonders. What's wrong with you?
Thing that we do on our show is something called the 5-Minute Coffee Hour, where we just talk about something that we've seen or read or experienced or something like that in the pop culture we're just kind of dying to talk about. But before we get to that, let me give you guys a chance to plug. So, Lucas, we got your plugs last time, but do you want to plug your website again just for old time's sake?
I have a blog on postmodern Christianity, religion, and science, and all sorts of random things. It is Dacalu, Dacalu. .wordpress.com.
And Ben, where are you? What are you doing? How can people find you?
Yes, you can find my podcast, Priest Pulse, on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Liberty Syndication. You just Google Priest Pulse or search for Priest Pulse on iTunes. And you can find me on Twitter as at Priest Pulse. And that's basically it.
I just started the first episode of season 2 of Daredevil.
Oh,
I've been Holy considering God. Daredevil.
Oh,
I've heard
it
on the radio.
Did you watch season 1 of Daredevil, or are you considering season 2?
I'm considering Daredevil in the general sense. I have not committed any time to it.
Hang up the Skype call and just go to your Netflix and watch Daredevil right now. Right now.
Okay.
That good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like every episode. Okay, so Netflix just in general, like, I feel like they understand binge-watching better than any other, you know, company out there. So they know, like, this is the way you end an episode. This is the way you get people staying up until 4 o'clock in the morning. Like, this is the formula. And, I mean, the Daredevil shows do that so much better than any other show. I rarely find myself falling asleep. Although, I got to tell you, I heard about this new technology called Netflix Socks. Have you guys heard about this?
No.
So it's like socks that have sensors in them that you can program to your Netflix feed. And if you fall asleep while you're watching your Netflix show, it'll pause your show.
What?
So you don't lose like a bunch of episodes because the socks will determine whether or not you're moving. So if the socks stay still for too long, then a countdown will start on your Netflix. And so if you're awake, you just rub your feet together and it'll keep going. But if you're asleep, it'll pause your show. Is that not the greatest technology ever? How did we exist without this? This and Squatty Potty, I'm telling you. I don't know how we lived as a society without these things.
Evidently, so, you make your own socks? Like, I'm looking at this. I'm confused. They seem to be a DIY project.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. But somebody can market these.
I want to know, how depressing is Daredevil? Because I don't really like depressing shows that much.
No, I don't think it's... I wouldn't use the term depressing for it. It's dark, but, like, in a way that's so much better than... Batman vs. Superman was dark, like in a way that I don't know, that I think lands the dark superhero thing, the gritty superhero thing, so in such a better way, and asks like real legitimate questions about heroes and about and talk about theology. Oh my gosh, it's the most theological superhero show or movie or whatever ever, by far. It asks all kinds of questions about God and God's relationship to us and our relationship to evil and right and wrong. I mean, it's just so deep and just does everything so well. It's just awesome. Season one, I haven't watched season two yet. Season one is just so on point.
It's hard to get past that previous Daredevil movie. Maybe that's why I haven't committed to it. You know, another friend we've talked about on this podcast started.
That's right. You know, been a flick.
You know.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And, you know, and it's like all these other great Netflix shows. It's one of these that, I mean, honestly, like I started the first episode of season two. I was like, ah, jeez, here we go. I'm going to be here for a while. I may as well get comfortable. Let me settle in.
So if I like Jessica Jones, I'm going to like Daredevil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If only because there's a Luke Cage teaser.
All about it.
At the end. Yeah.
More Cage.
And, you know, we are – Popping Collars is a pro Luke Cage
nice.
We are.
Podcast. We are.
Cage.
Nice.
We are – we are Team Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Sweet Christmas. You can find Popping Collars on Twitter at Popping Collars. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Popping Collars. And you can find all of our shows at poppingcollarspodcast.com, where you can listen to your heart's content, everything that we have to offer. What we do ask is that if you use a podcasting service, subscribe, rate, review our show. That way more people will get a chance to see us and hear us. Finally, you can find our shows each and every time on episcopalcafe.com. We love episcopalcafe.com. We know you will as well. Check them out for all your Episcopal news and beyond. So with that, that's Popping Collars for this time. Thank you, Lucas. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Ben, for coming on the show. We'll see you next time.
Keep those collars popping.